Good morning. I'm Deborah Zagajewski. I'm the Director of Religious Education here at Westminster. That summer, the fence that stretched through our town seemed bigger. We lived in a yellow house on one side of it. White people lived on the other. And Mama said, "Don't climb over the fence when you play." She said it wasn't safe. That summer, there was a girl who wore a pink sweater. Each morning, she climbed up on the fence and stared over at our side. Sometimes I stared back. She never sat on that fence with anybody. That girl didn't. Once, when we were jumping rope, she asked if she could play. Sandra said no, without even asking any of the rest of us. I don't know what I would have said. Maybe yes, maybe no. That summer, everyone and everything on the other side of the fence seemed far away. When I asked my mama why, she said, "Because that's the way things have always been." Sometimes when me and mama went into town, I saw that girl with her mama. She looked sad sometimes, that girl did. "Don't stare," my mama said. "It's not polite." It rained a lot that summer. On rainy days, that girl sat on the fence in a raincoat. She let herself get all wet and acted like she didn't even care. Sometimes I saw her dancing around in puddles, splashing and laughing. Mama wouldn't let me go out in the rain. "That's why I bought you rainy day toys," my mama said. "You stay inside here, where it's warm and safe and dry." But every time it rained, I looked for that girl, and I always found her somewhere near the fence. Someplace in the middle of summer, the rain stopped. When I walked outside, the grass was damp and the sun was already high up in the sky. And I stood there with my hands up in the air. I felt brave that day. I felt free. I got close to the fence and that girl asked me my name. "Clover," I said. "My name's Annie," she said, "Annie Paul. I live over yonder," she said, "by where you see the laundry. That's my blouse hanging on the line." She smiled then. She had a pretty smile. And then I smiled. We stood there looking at each other, smiling. "It's nice up here on the fence," Annie said. "You can see all over." I ran my hand along the fence. I reached up and touched the top of it. "A fence like this was made for sitting on," Annie said. She looked at me sideways. "My mama says I shouldn't go on the other side," I said. "My mama says the same thing, but she never said anything about sitting on it." "Neither did mine," I said. That summer, me and Annie sat together on that fence, and when Sandra and them looked at me funny, I just made believe I didn't care. Some mornings, my mama watched us. I waited for her to tell me to get down from that fence before I break my neck or something, but she never did. "I see you made a new friend," she said one morning, and I nodded. And Mama smiled. That summer, me and Annie sat on that fence and watched the whole world go by. One day, Sandra and them were jumping rope near the fence, and we asked if we could play. "I don't care," Sandra said. And when we jumped, Sandra and me were partners, the way we used to be. When we were all too tired to jump anymore, we sat up on the fence, all of us, in a long line. Someday. Someday somebody's gonna come along and knock this old fence down, Annie said. And I nodded. Yeah, I said. Someday.
There was a time in this country, right up until the 1960s, when segregation was a thing. Segregation, which meant keeping kids separated from each other and adults apart, too. It can feel odd to think about it now, how there were laws that made it illegal for black children to go to some of the same restaurants as white children, or sit in the same part of the theater or the same section of the bus. That there were fences and railroad tracks that divided towns in two, and people were told not to go to the other side. It was dangerous. You could get hurt. Don't go there. And there were laws that made it illegal or very difficult for people of color to vote, to have a voice in big decisions in their own towns and states. There were laws that made it illegal for a white person and a person of color to get married, made it illegal for people of color to go to some stores or some schools or some hospitals. Separate but equal, the laws said. We want to keep people separate, but we also want it to be equal. It was definitely separate, but it was definitely not equal. It hadn't been equal for a long time. There was no balance in that imbalance. There was no equal in that equality. Schools for white people had more money, more books, and teachers with more education. Hospitals for white people had better equipment, more rooms, more nurses, and doctors with more training. And the neighborhoods, well, the neighborhoods that had the nicest houses, some of those neighborhoods would only sell to white people. Separate, but not equal, not balanced, not good. The racism that had been used for hundreds of years as a justification for slavery, the racism that said that one race is better than another, that one skin color somehow makes a person more worthy of good things, this is how that racism showed up, even 100 years after slavery ended. It showed up as divided, but not even, not fair, not right, not good. So, that's the story behind the story. That's the moment in history that sets up what's happening here. But Clover and Annie, they don't talk about all that. Maybe they don't even know all that. What they do know is what their moms tell them. Don't cross the fence. Don't go to the other side. You could get hurt. It's not safe. But there's something in us humans, isn't there, that still just feels a pull. Something in us, whatever age we are, that looks back, even as we are tugged forward, that looks over, curious, wondering, interested, who are you there on the other side of that fence? Who are you on the other side of that big, wide field? Who are you there, so far away from me, splashing in those puddles, laughing in the rain? There's something in us humans, isn't there, that wants to step outside, feel the sun, be brave, be vulnerable, reach out, follow that tug to the edge. I invite you to remain seated for this hymn. And just join in whenever you feel comfortable. It's new. I think you'll recognize the chorus. but the choir knows it. Right, choir?
All we have ever loved, and all we have ever been, stand with us on the edge of all creation. Amen.
So, yeah, segregation, legal segregation. When there were laws enforcing separation by the color of your skin, some would say that was a long time ago. If you're 10 years old, that would be 5 or more lifetimes ago. If you're 6, that would be 9 or more lifetimes. Sure sounds like a long time. And a lot has changed since then. A lot of people worked to change it. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, civil rights leader and radical thinker, he led a movement to change those laws. And although his tactics were controversial in his day, a lot of people stepped up. A lot of people, black people and other people too, Asian people, white people, native people, many kinds of people from many different places. You've probably heard some of the stories, like the marches in Selma in 1965 for the freedom to exercise the right to vote so people of color could have their voices heard in their towns and in their country. Or maybe you've heard of the Children's March, often called the Birmingham Children's Crusade, also in Selma, but this in 1963. It was all young people, 13, 15, 16, and some I heard as young as 7 or 8, marching for freedom to change those laws and to change minds. Or maybe you've heard of Ruby Bridges, the 6-year-old black girl who was escorted by police marshals into an all-white elementary school in 1960. As soon as she came in, the white parents took their children out, and white teachers refused to teach her. Except for one, who taught Ruby alone for a whole year, before slowly, one by one, the parents and other teachers opened their eyes and hearts and came back in. It's tough stuff. Many white people felt threatened by the changes that were happening. They didn't want to change. They were mad, and some of them were mean. They did things that were meant to scare and intimidate the people who wanted equality, to scare and intimidate the people who wanted to right the balance. But because of the courage of Martin Luther King and Ruby Bridges and that teacher who taught her and those young people and the Children's Crusade and many, many other people, the people in power were convinced or forced to change the laws and the way the laws were carried out. The people who stood up against injustice succeeded in making change, in fixing some big problems with the way things were. They helped make things more equal. By the time I was born in the late 60s, is that funny? By the time I was born, I am that old, yeah. By the time I was born in the late 60s, it was over. Or, well, that's what I was taught anyway. I was taught when I was in elementary school and in high school that the civil rights movement successfully changed this country. So we're done, all set. Thank goodness that's over. But now, another 30 years later, I see, well, some things are over. The civil rights movement helped knock down some fences, ended legal segregation, made it possible for white people and people of color to marry, made it possible for black and white children to go to the same school or sit together at the movies, and made it more possible for black people to exercise their right to vote. Even so, the truth is, things didn't change nearly as much or as deeply as I was led to believe at the time. Maybe 50-some years isn't all that long ago after all. Because these days, parents of young black girls and young black boys, they still warn their kids about the other side of town. Tell them they'd better not play hide-and-seek in their neighbors' yards on the other side of the fence. What they're doing could be misunderstood. They could get hurt. It's not safe. And you know, even though white children and black children can go to the same school together and no state marshals are needed to escort them into the building, the fact is that most schools in this country are still either mostly white or mostly people of color. And most neighborhoods in this country are either mostly white or mostly people of color. We're still very separate. We're still very segregated. And the fact is, the schools with mostly white people tend to have more money and more books and teachers with more education. The neighborhoods with the nicest houses still tend to belong to mostly white people who tend to have more money and can pay for better health insurance and can afford more tests and better hospitals and doctors with more training. Things are still not equal. Things are still not right, not balanced, not good. So I wonder, where does that leave us, and what can we do? And I invite us to sing that same song one more time, now that we've kind of got the melody a little bit. Please join me.
All we have ever loved, and all we have ever been, stand with us on the edge of all creation. Amen.
So Martin Luther King did lead an incredible world-changing movement, controversial in his day, but many people stepped up to join him anyway. And because of all those people who got involved and spoke up and took risks, because of all the people who followed King's lead, who heard and came and made coffee and offered rides and made signs and donated money, some fences came down. Some things changed, laws changed. Thank goodness for all those people. What they did was really, really good. And things are still not right. That negativity, that racism, that idea that people with one skin color are better than people with another, that some lives matter more than others, that feeling, it's still around. It's crazy when you think about it that an idea that has been proven wrong, an idea that has no basis in reality, an idea that is hurtful to so many people, it's crazy, but somehow this idea keeps coming back in new forms, like a flu that returns again and again, one strain after another. Or like a believable lie, an ugly rumor, a bad ghost story that for some reason people just keep telling over and over, changing it a little each time. They tell it, even though they know on some level it's not true. This racism that divides and imbalances us is still showing up in schools, in healthcare, in jobs, in neighborhoods. It's still showing up, and it's showing up in different ways. So we need to show up too in different ways. Fighting the racism of yesteryear was about changing laws that kept people separate and unequal. Fighting the racism of today is about changing hearts and minds and systems that keep people separate and unequal. What do I mean? So here's the thing. Once you divide people, and say some lives are worth more and some less, once you give some people more money and some less, some more support and some less, systems get built that keep that belief going. Neighborhoods get built for people with more money, with schools that provide better education, which gives those children a better chance at jobs that pay more so that when they grow up, they can buy nicer houses in neighborhoods with better schools, and the cycle continues and it stays unequal. And once you divide people and say some lives are worth more and some less, and treat some people better and some worse, so that some groups are more successful and some less, stories get told that are used to justify the differences we see. And once you divide people and we don't see each other every day and we don't know each other really, not really what's going on with each other, not in our hearts, we're vulnerable to believing some of those negative stories. We're vulnerable to believing those old rumors and ghost stories and lies that say, yeah, the reason they're not doing well is because they're just not as good or not as smart or hardworking or whatever. Forgetting the history that got us here and the systems that keep us here. Or maybe we don't believe those lies, but we feel kind of helpless or just disconnected. We don't know who they are, or we don't even really know what to do, and we are so busy anyway. When people are divided and have been divided for a long time, we are vulnerable to believing misinformation. We're vulnerable to feeling disconnected, and we're vulnerable to letting wrongs stay wrong on our watch. Racism may well still be showing up, but we can show up too. And We've been showing up. You've been showing up to events sponsored by the Race Discussions team, events to prepare us to pass an anti-racism resolution and take a stand. 35 of you came out to watch Race, the Power of an Illusion 2 weeks ago, and over 40 people attended the movie last Friday. You've been coming to chapel chats and talkbacks, you've been reading the e-blasts and bulletin inserts, and most importantly, you are here today. We have been showing up and taking a second look at the lies and half-truths that are out there, talking about what we've seen, what we've heard, what we've been led to believe, and learning some things are not quite what they appear, that there's more to the story, that we are part of the story, and looking at what we can do to change things. And the invitation continues, expands, widens beyond this place. There is a larger invitation in this country to participate in a new movement for racial justice, different from the civil rights movement led by Martin Luther King, a movement with new leaders, a movement for our day. It's the movement for Black lives, for justice, a movement that says, no, Black lives don't matter less, that says Black lives matter too, that says Black lives matter. It's a movement that addresses the worst injustices aimed at a people most oppressed, and in doing so, begins to dismantle the fences that divide us all. Because the tricky thing about racism, it doesn't just divide us by skin color. When we start talking about it, any group can feel divided about how to handle it, how to address it, whose fault it is, who should do something to fix it, and what that something is. Racism can divide white people from white people and people of color from people of color too. Racism divides us all. And we humans, we weren't meant to be divided. We weren't made to be separate. We weren't made to be restricted to one side of a fence or another. And Clover and Annie, the heroines of the story that Deborah told, they know that. They know we weren't meant to be divided. They feel that something that's in us humans, underneath all these crazy, self-perpetuating, made-up, nasty lies, underneath all that, they know that something in us that just feels a pull, that wonders and is open and brave and wants to reach out. This something that asks, who are you there, really, on the other side of this fence? Where are you coming from? Who are you? There is just something, I think, in us all that wants to step forward, offer a hand, accept a hand, and be in the balance, looking out and looking forward together.